everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach.
And welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm not your host, but I will be interviewing your host, Sheen, today. Sheen, welcome to my podcast.
Hello, do you want to introduce yourself?
Oh yeah, I'm Shweta, Sheen's close friend.
Oh, you said close friend. Term.
Well,
that's
the
acquaintance.
Best friend title is still a little up for grabs, but...
Hello.
How does it feel to be in the hot seat?
Because it's you, it feels great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's go. What
Buttering
what are we
up
about?
The interviewer.
Isn't that how it works?
That's on me. Okay.
Okay.
So, hello. Sheen.
Yes.
A lot of your fans already know your journey, but in case there's anyone new joining us today, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Okay. So shall I start on a fine Friday morning when I was born? Okay, so brief intro, originally from Mauritius, went to Oxford, did material science there, then went to Cambridge, got a PhD in spinal research, and decided science wasn't for me, became a corporate sellout, went into consulting, moved with a consulting job to Dubai, and then left that, worked in a media company for about 6 months as a COO, and then moved to a tech startup as a COO for around a year. And in the meantime, started the podcast, started YouTube, and then decided that I want to do more of that. So now currently I do the podcast full time, content creation, and I also teach part time. And also recently started the Professionnel Network, which is a networking group for women in the UAE. Check it out.
Okay. Wow. So we went from science to consulting to media to tech and now full time content creation.
Yes.
How are you doing this? A real question. I mean, for people like me, change is hard and change is scary. And you are just change. So how are you making these leaps?
That's a very good question. And I think if I were to answer it in one word is, how do I deal with change? Very badly. Okay, that's two words. I mean, I don't like change either. And I think it's human nature not to like change, because we love our comfort zone. But at the same time, change is the only thing that's inevitable in life. And I personally think, because of all of the things that life has thrown at me, that the universe is just trying to make me grow a thick skin, you know, because I hate change. And I've always trained for one thing and then suddenly I couldn't do this anymore. And then you're like, okay, change. And you know all the situations as to why I left different places. And it's never been easy. But I think now, looking back, actually, this is very recent developments of what I think about change, right, is that I have survived everything that has been thrown at me.
And thrived.
Thrived is a... I don't know if we're there yet. But I think the one thing that I've learned is that whatever happens, you just have to, like, deal with it. And recently, somebody told me... I can't remember. Oh, I think it was Sana who told me this. You know the bison story? You know bisons, right? The animal. So they are the only animal in the world that actually, when there's a tornado coming, they will run at the tornado rather than away from it. Because they know that the shortest distance out of the tornado is through the tornado. Because otherwise you're always running and the tornado is always chasing you. And I was like, that's such a good analogy, right? Because what you have to do is basically deal with your problems head on. And that's how you get on the other side quicker. And that's one thing I've been trying to do. So I think when it comes to dealing with change is really just being okay with being uncomfortable, right? And for example, recently I had a bit of an issue and I didn't want to deal with it, like the legal route. But then the advice I got was, sit with it, be uncomfortable, right? Because that's how you grow, just by sitting in the uncomfortable zone. And what's the worst that can happen is that your situation stays as shitty as it is right now, or it can get a little bit better. So, you know, it can't really get worse at this point. So I think that's what I've learned over time, is that you either go along with change or you're going to suffer, right? And another thing that I want to add to this is, at the end of the day, we all choose our poison. And what I mean by that is, either you stay in an uncomfortable situation, so you don't have to deal with a change, but you deal with the uncomfortable situation on a day-to-day basis. or you'd make the change, deal with the fact that it's uncomfortable initially, but then you're in a better position. So some people might choose the first case, which is absolutely fine. It's just a question of choosing your poison.
Yeah.
And that's why I know that for me day to day, over a long period of time, I can't deal with that because anxiety shoots up. I would rather deal with it for a short time and get out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so this sounds like you've done a lot of mindset work, you know, which hasn't been easy.
No.
But I think about you starting your career as a content creator, right? Especially in the beginning, you're doing all of this work and creating all of this content for like small number of views, and like maybe like 10, 20, 30 views, right? So you have to really stick through it to get where you are now. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of helped you stick through it? Like, how do you find the strength to stay with it?
Again, very good question. It's like you should be doing this.
I should have my own job,
right? I think honestly, you're right. Like at the start, it's really hard when you're doing it. But for me, I think what kept me going at different stages was different. So the first part of it was the excitement of doing something new. So you know, when you just started, you're learning a lot of new things while you're doing it, and it becomes exciting every time you're publishing to see who's watching it. And even if you get 100 views, you're like, oh my god, 100 people watched it. And now you get 100 views, like, what happened? Why did it tank? So there's a lot of that at the start, so that kept me going. And then you see a bit of rapid growth as well at the start, right? Especially for me, because a lot of supportive people around, and then it kind of, but then it plateaued for a very long time. And at that time, I was working full time as a consultant, and I was working 18 hours a day, hated it.
Right.
And I felt like my creativity was being stifled. But then that was the time that I was the most consistent with my content creation.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
How?
And I think it's because in my head, I was like, I don't want to use my free time to escape the life that I have. I want to use it to build the life that I want.
Wow.
So that's how I became so like adamant on creating content consistently. And then somebody told me as well, you know, forget the views for now, because it's just about volume right now. Just pump the content out so that whenever something picks up, people will come to your page and see there's a lot of similar stuff there, and they will stay. So that's when I became very diligent about it. I was like, build my little schedule for Saturdays. So Saturdays morning will be scripting. Then I get ready, do my hair, do my makeup, and I film for the rest of the day.
Wow.
But then I hired an editor, because that was the one thing that I didn't have time for, was to edit. Just send it to the editor, get it done. And that was, and I would have to pay, right, for my editor. So that was out of pocket. But I was ready to do that investment because I believed in it. And that's the one thing, that you do believe in it most days, not all the time, but most days you think, okay, this will happen at some point. I just need to keep pushing. And I have to say, a lot of times I did not believe that, okay, I am pushing. And the things that you're most proud of, you know, that you put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
So for people who don't have context, so on YouTube Studio, where you upload your videos, every time you upload, after like a few, I think after the first hour, it tells you the ranking of that video compared to the past 10 videos that you've uploaded.
Oh, wow.
So a 1 out of 10 is incredible. And if you get a 1 out of 10, YouTube Studio gives you this little firework bombs on your screen, right? And when you see that, you're like, oh my God, I used to film it every time. But if you don't get it, if it's a 10 out of 10, it's like harrowing.
Oh no.
You know?
Do they just like blacken your screen? just like
little violet. But honestly, it was horrible. Okay, I can see a horse outside. I'm trying not to be distracted, but there's a horse outside. And but sometimes I will put in all of my love, all of my effort into a video, and I'm like, this is gonna be a hit, you know? And you post that, and it's a 10 out of 10. And then one video that I will film on my phone, I don't even care about it, I post it and it's a 1 out of 10. And then you're like, what is this? What is this? You guys, what is this? And it's just like this. It's irregular. So you kind of have to stick to it. But then eventually it happened for me. And when the one thing went viral,
right,
and it was true, when people came, then everything else, the views went up, right? And then that made me realize, okay, it is true that consistency does pay off. And then since I became more consistent, I mean, I took a break for a while, right, then went back on Instagram and became more consistent again. And when I took a break, it was because I couldn't do it anymore. You know, I was like, I don't even know what to post. The things that I really want to do creatively are not doing well. And the things that I don't want to do, I can just do it, but they do well, but then it's not driving me anymore. So that's when I took a break, thinking I need to re-strategize, think again about how I want to approach this whole game. And that's when I decided to do the podcast again, rather than do just random content. And then I stuck to it, and it picked up. And even now, it plateaus every now and then, right? And when it plateaus, it's just, now you've tasted that little virality, and then you know you are kind of like chasing it, even if you don't want to be chasing it, but you are chasing it. And now, I guess the one thing that keeps me going is that I have a team to feed, you know. So then your priorities change a little, but at the same time, now I've found the thing that really drives me. And now, to answer your question a very long-winded way, right now what really motivates me is that I love podcasts. I love the conversation I have. I love meeting new people, and I think that at the end of the day, it's a little bit selfish at this point that I schedule it and I get to learn from this person. Right. Great if other people watch it, but I already enjoyed it and I got something out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let me take you back to what you said a few minutes ago, which is that you kind of have to believe, right, that this is going to work out for you. And we've had so many conversations where that belief has gone up and down, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people starting out as content creators or women in general struggle with the self-belief, right?
Yes.
So how have you kind of kept that in a world of like opportunities going away or like views going up and down? How have you kept your self-belief?
This is going to sound really cheesy.
Do it.
But it's fully because of the people in my life.
Okay.
Like you. Like you've been there through the really low moments, you know, of like when, for example, I had that one brand. I don't know if I told you. I think I did. Yeah. I did tell you about this brand. A huge brand reached out, wanted to work with me. And then when we had the call and I told them about my pricing, they kind of like laughed at me. And they were like, our budget for you would be less than half of that. And it really bothered me. And I remember messaging you because even though the initial reaction is anger and you're like, how dare you? Like, I know my worth. And then secondly, you're like, oh, wait, but they're a big brand. Maybe they know my worth better than I do. And then I did question, maybe, you know, that's how I'm being viewed. And maybe that's the reality of where I should be. There are people who are better than me. And then you start to spiral and you're like, was it a good decision to do this? Other people are doing better than me. And it is really hard, and I'm not going to lie, it's never consistent. You go through ups and downs of like believing in yourself, and when something really great happens, you are on a high. You remember, for example, when I was in Kenya and I messaged you saying, this is the happiest I've ever been. But then you have very low lows as well. And I think for me, what has worked is recognizing when something is external, an external factor that is influencing how you view yourself. And it's hard to do that, especially when you're very young, because you do attach a lot of value to what external people think about you. But the older I grew, I realized that, okay, this is what these people are telling me. Let me double check with the people that I trust and love, whether they agree with that or they agree with me. And that's what I do with you, right? Yeah. I will always ask you, do you think that was right? Because sometimes it might be constructive feedback, and I need to take that into account. Right. But if the people that you trust, their judgment, are telling you that is not true, and for me, that helps. Because now immediately I'm like, whose opinion do I value most? The person that knows me very well or the person that doesn't? Okay, this person. So I'm going to stick with that one, and I'm going to keep it with me until I feel internally the same way. So I use it as a shield.
Right.
And that has been incredibly useful to me, because I think in the times when you feel really low and you are doubting yourself, you can't automatically switch that to, now I believe in myself.
Yeah.
It takes a while, and it's a little journey. But what can help you until you get there is to have this little shield that protects you from the external factors. And that is just a shield of love from people around you, which is why you really need to support yourself with people who believe in you and who support you. And you know what? A lot of people around me don't understand what I'm doing.
Right.
Like my parents, maybe even you. like you know, you don't understand social media.
Exactly.
So a lot of people don't understand it, but they know me and they believe in me and my potential, and they're there to support. And that's why I've started to purge, right, which you've told me to do for a long time now, because a lot of people are there kind of like being supportive but not really, and they will drag you down in very, very different ways. So choose the people who you surround yourself with. And you know how people say that you are the average of the five people who are closest to you, and that is so true. I've seen the difference when I'm surrounded by people who are like really passionate about what they do and hustling. I just want to hustle every day. But then when you're around people who keep like complaining about how things are going and how, you know, things are hard, then you might just be like, okay, no, that's not really what I want to be doing. Maybe I should question. And then your productivity goes down as well. So that's why it's really important to like have a very good balance of who you're surrounded by. But how do you deal with it?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
We're not answering. Are we asking me questions?
Fine. If you don't want to answer it.
I think it's very similar, actually. Yeah. I think for me, it's definitely being very judicious about who I trust in my life to give their opinions. But that's also hard, right? Like, I think we've had so many conversations.
We all make mistakes.
About how we evolve from certain friend groups and people and grow out of people. And that part is painful.
It is.
Right? To it have is. A friend you've had in your life for a very long time who you just...
suddenly changes.
Yeah. Mm. So how do you kind of decide, like, who is the right person to keep around you and who's not serving you anymore?
Oh, I'll let you know when I figure it out. It's so hard,
you know,
because for me, especially, so this is very, it's a very delicate subject, but I'm going to try and approach it as delicately as I can. But, you know, for me, my problem is I have a very perceived public success, right? So this is what people can see. They see the numbers, they see you working with Bill Gates, and they're like, okay, she's made it, but she hasn't. She's still hustling, you know?
She's hustling.
She is hustling. And, but then they form an opinion about you, and they form an opinion about what you deserve or not in your life, okay? And one thing I've experienced is that a lot of people who were there in the trenches with me, who were very supportive, being like, it will happen for you, I believe in you, keep going, keep going. When I made it, I couldn't see these people anymore. You're like, where are you? Where did you go? You were the one who was excited for me to get there, and now I want to celebrate with you, but they're not there. And you realize that a lot of people are supportive as long as you're not more successful than them.
Wow.
And that's been a really hard lesson to learn, because you expect it from some people, you know, like the outer group of friends, but you don't expect it from your ride or dies, right? And for me, that was the hardest thing to deal with, especially because some really close friends have shown this to me. And when I went viral, the numbers went up. Somebody even messaged me saying, you know, virality doesn't last. I know, someone told me, who would have thought that you would go viral? I mean, I did.
So did I.
And then someone else was like, must be nice to be known for yourself.
Wow.
Right? So, and these are all friends, you know, and friends who have seen me hustle, who were there supporting me. And when it happened, their first reaction wasn't celebration.
It was to put you down.
It was to put me down. And that's when you realize that not everybody is actually rooting for you. And so to answer your question, just learn the hard, I learned the hard way that not everybody is a real friend.
Yeah.
And that's what Sarah told me, was that every time she has a big milestone in her life, she purges. Because that's when a lot of people will show you their true colors. And once they show you, just listen to them and believe them, right? Don't try to argue. Don't try to hold on to the relationship thinking we had great times together. So I've lost a lot of really close friends recently. And I think it's to do with the fact that life changes and your path changes, and there might be no bad feelings. I don't hold any grudges. It's just that they can't be part of the journey anymore, and that's absolutely fine. I appreciate the good times we shared and the times that they were there as good friends, but unfortunately we can't be together anymore, and that is fine. But then you discover new people along the way who become family, right? Exactly.
Wow, I love that. Speaking of our friendship,
yes,
something that has always struck me about you that I don't find in a lot of my friends today is how important your faith is to you.
Oh, yes.
Faith and religion. Like, yes. I think I'm a spiritual person. I wouldn't say I'm religious. Mm-hmm. But you're religious, and your faith means a lot to you.
Yes.
Right? Do you find it hard to maintain your faith in, like, today's age? Because I don't find a lot of people our age that are very religious.
You're absolutely right. It is really hard. And for me, like, obviously, I was born Muslim. Mm-hmm. So growing up, it was always doing what your parents have told you to do without really questioning much. First time I became aware of my religion was when I went to university.
Right.
Because now nobody's around to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. And now it's entirely up to you. And I did, like, stop doing most of the things. But then eventually I had my own kind of, like, relationship with my faith where I realized that I, you know, classic when you are having a problem and you're dealing with something really hard and then you pray. I prayed really hard for it and I could sense some divine intervention for me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided that, okay, in this moment, I feel that this is real.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stick to it. And I'm going to remember this feeling because I know it's going to waver through life. And that's when I decided I'm going to stick to my faith. And then I always made sure that I had kind of like Muslim friends around as well, just so that it helps you.
Yeah.
Because the majority of my friends are non-Muslim. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's just that I need that grounding, you know, because otherwise it's so easy to think, especially when you think of social things like drinking.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of Muslim friends who drink, right? And I'm not here to judge, but this is not something I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. So, but imagine if I keep hanging out with these people, how long will it take before I'm like, you know what? Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
It's not that bad, right? I can do it too. So that's why I don't want my own kind of like values to be compromised.
Yeah.
So that's why I make sure that I also have kind of like a right balance of people on both sides. And yes, now it is definitely a journey.
Yeah.
Like I'm not perfect in any way, but for me, I just try to put myself in this path of constantly improving a little bit on my faith every time and trying to stick to it. So for example, recently I started waking up for Fajr in the morning. I love how even you know that, because I made sure everybody does because it was a big deal for me.
It was,
right?
Yeah.
I'm not a morning person.
Yeah.
You know,
she's not a morning person.
And now I'm making the effort of waking up and making sure that, you know, I'm sticking to that. And it's changed my life, you know, it's changed my days. And I really like this. And it's really disrupting my sleep, but that's because I sleep very late.
Yeah.
But slow improvement for me is what really matters. And that's what I'm doing, you know. And it's just like, and for me, having God is like having a best friend in my head. Where, you know,
I love that.
When every time something goes wrong, I'm like, but why are you doing this? What happened? We had a deal. You know, I told you last time I was paying my rent. I was like, listen, we have a deal now. Okay, last time I'm paying my own rent, find me a husband. So that's, for me, that's how it is. You know, I carry God with me like a best friend in my head that I just have little chats with every now and then. And it helps me, especially through the hard times, because then you know that, you know, not everything and all the time will be good. But for me, I believe in the bigger picture and that I am where I'm meant to be, and nothing that's meant to me will go past me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But your faith has also been an important part of you kind of keeping the journey and keeping the faith that you're going to find the person for you.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Talk to me about that, because I know, I mean, I've been married for 5 years. Love you, Alex. But
love Alex.
But it's hard being single.
Yeah.
In your 30s.
Yes.
And I think it's also not easy to keep the faith that the person that is meant for you is out there, right? Mm-hmm. Which I believe the person that's meant for you is out there.
Yeah.
He's hanging around somewhere.
He's there. He's making money.
Yeah, he's making money. He's going to earn enough. And then when you meet him, it'll be like, wow.
Yes.
But it's hard, right, to go through kind of day to day and still keep the faith that he's out there.
Yes.
So talk to me about that.
Well, it's hard, definitely. Mm-hmm. And especially we've had some very interesting people.
Candidates.
Yeah. Very interesting. we've seen it all at this point, right?
Yeah.
We've seen all the toxic levels that exist. And obviously, because when you're dating and when you're meeting new people, I have given fair chances, I would like to think, to a lot of people.
Too many
sometimes.
Overly generous chances.
Thank you. Say. I agree. No more of that. But at some point I was sure that, yeah, I was like, you know what, maybe it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, you were.
Right. And you know, I had the weirdest interaction. I don't know why I'm sharing this on camera, but I will, because you're here. I was in Dubai Mall, and mm-hmm. I was going to get my car in the car park, yeah? Mm-hmm. And I'm walking past, you know, the second floor has all the baby stuff?
Yeah.
I walked past one of the shops with baby clothes, and I got super emotional. And I was thinking, damn, I'm 30. I don't think it's going to happen for me. I was like, I haven't found someone. By the time I get married, mm-hmm. by the time I have children, it's not going to happen. And I was like, I feel so disconnected from it that I don't think it's going to happen. So then I was mourning the fact that I'm never going to have a family. All the way until I got to my car. I drove home. I was upset. God. And then when I was like, wait, why am I upset right now? Because I saw a shop, right? And then you realize that, probably hormones as well. But then you realize that a lot of pressure is there, you know, because... and. Funny enough, a lot of people will remind you your biological clock is ticking, you need to get married, don't be this difficult. This I get all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't be difficult.
We've heard that one.
Yeah, and don't ask for too much, don't be superficial.
You're so intimidating to me.
Oh, God.
My favorite.
The intimidating one is the best.
Yeah.
So many people, even our friends, by the way, have said this to me, being like, you're too intimidating, any man would be intimidated, and you're not going to be, like, you know, a bit of a cheerleader who is super nice, and then, you know, then makes it harder for other for men to approach you.
Which I don't understand, because you are a cheerleader.
Literally.
You cheer me on all the time.
Exactly. I'm the biggest cheerleader of anybody. Yeah. And if someone thinks just because of what they perceive of me, that means that I'm not going to be a cheerleader, we're not a good fit anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's not fine. The man for you.
Not the man for me. It's been tough staying like clear-headed, especially when everyone around you starts to get married, engaged, having children. Then you're like, okay, well... When's is it gonna happen? Where is he? Is he lost? Have you heard that song, which is "Where's My Soulmate"? Maybe I don't have a soul, or he died. And I was like,
oh my god,
maybe he died. You know, tragic death. But I don't know where he is. But we do think positively.
And yes.
And what we put out there in the universe really matters. So now I've changed my narrative of like, when is it gonna happen? As to just, it is gonna happen whenever. So we're just out here. Living our lives, getting ready. At some point, he's going to come.
Yeah.
And I saw this girl, you know, on Instagram. She is this Christian girl.
Yeah.
And she started this series of where she writes a letter to her future husband that she hasn't met yet.
Wow.
And every Sunday, she it's literally like a little diary of like, hey, today I did this. I did this. And I hope you're doing this. I hope you're looking after yourself. You're eating. It's like a proper letter to somebody. And she's collecting it as like videos.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I was like, that's the strong belief that this person is coming.
Yeah.
And you're just getting ready for this. And I'm working on this belief as well of like, he's going to come. And honestly, I love the little messages you always send me when you're like, oh, he's probably going to be at Step.
You know? He's at COP 28. Just wait.
Yeah. Make sure you get the right COP 28? You were like, maybe he's going to be at COP 28. You know, he's just going to be there.
He's here somewhere. There are a lot of people at this conference. I mean, he could be outside right now.
He could be. We just need to go outside
and
have a little wander around. But yeah, I agree. I think he's coming. If you guys know anybody, send them my way.
Yeah. So, now you're a full-time content creator. How do you feel when people say you're just an influencer?
Oh, funny you ask that. I mean, I have a great story.
Okay.
So one day I was at a dinner with a group of people, and it came up, you know, about the fact that I teach currently at university, and someone then was like, oh, yeah, you're a sellout for going to consulting. And this one girl turned to me and she was like, oh, I thought you were just an influencer. And I was like, you know what, I personally don't have an issue being called an influencer, but it's the tone of just an influencer. And you know, I don't get angry easily. I kind of got mad.
Really?
Yeah. And then I got really like touchy about it, and I was like, what do you mean, like,
just
an influencer? And she was like, oh, I don't know, like, is that what you do, just like film and record content and that's it? And I was like, well, not quite. But anyway, I'm not going to go into details as to what that conversation entailed. It doesn't paint me in the best of light. But I've also been asked, one time someone told me, what do you do with your day? You just sit with a ring light, right? Mm. And again, I got so offended by that. Because these two things happened, then I questioned myself. I was like, why does it bother me when people say, yeah, are you just an influencer? Because I am an influencer.
You are an influencer.
But it's because of the negative connotations mm-hmm. attached with it. Mm-hmm. When people say to you, they kind of think of someone who, you know, is a little bit brainless and is just sitting and being very vain and filming themselves in front of a ring light and all of that bullshit, right? And it's just that. And I have also absorbed that definition of being an influencer. And that's why I was like, you know what? From now on, if people tell me this, I'll be like, thank you. I am an influencer. Be influenced, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be like, yeah, that's it. Because I love it.
Yeah.
I know what I do. And I'm not embarrassed
yeah.
of what I do. So now I'm going to try and not attack people when they call me an influencer.
That would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when I think of my, like, friends and the people in my life, like, I do think you're probably the most, like, influential person,
oh,
right?
Thanks.
Like, I remember we went for this, like, meditation
yeah.
one day. And
the
like,
cacao
we were in
ceremony.
The bathroom,
yeah.
yeah and we were washing our hands. And this girl came up to me and was like, are you Sheen? Like, and that's happened so often,
yeah.
right? And I think you do your best to help anybody that approaches you to the point of giving your phone number away to random strangers on the street.
I know.
And now you founded Pen,
yes.
right? As an effort to kind of help people more on a larger scale.
Yeah.
So talk to me about, like, you know, has this always been like a motivation for you to help people?
Mm-hmm.
How has that evolved over time as you've become more influential?
Great question. So yeah, for me initially when I started the podcast, for example, the idea
yeah.
was that when I was growing up, I did not have anyone to look up to
mm-hmm.
that wasn't related to me,
mm-hmm.
right? Any woman who either did science, they're not like reachable. Yes, you
yeah.
know the famous people, but they're not accessible. It's not relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Their journey is not relatable. So for me, the whole point was to spread as many stories as possible just to show
yeah.
how there's not one woman, there's not one story.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is so different that it doesn't matter where you come from, who you are, you can make it
yeah.
if you decide to. And my aim at that point was if I can change one person's life, that would be enough,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Wow.
And that's what I wanted to do. And that's how it all started. And then recently when I started getting recognized, for example, at Sharjah, this lady came up to me and she was absolutely crying her eyes out. And then both of us got super upset and we didn't know why. And I was like, why are you? She was like, why are you crying? I was like, I'm crying because you're crying. Why are you crying? She was like, I don't know. And I was like, what is going on? And it's just because, you know, she was then telling me how she got the courage to quit a very toxic job after 22 years.
Wow.
Because she watched my video of explaining how I've quit, you know, four times in 3 years. And she was like, but it's just because she's never heard the story of someone quitting. And after I quit and I went to the next one, it was still not the right thing and I quit again. So
yeah.
I was just showing that it's fine, whatever happens,
yeah.
you just need to quit this chapter of your life. And that gave her the courage to quit. And for me, that was like, wow, you know, like incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that I was able to do that for someone because nobody was able to do that for me, right? Because when I was trying to quit, it was very much just, I guess we'll just see what happens, you know?
Am I going to be okay?
Yeah. And it's amazing to see that kind of response.
Yeah.
And that has helped me. And then the idea for Pen came through because Lamide, who's my co-founder, she moved to Dubai like a year after I moved.
Yeah.
And then when we were meeting, she was like, you know, we need to make more friends. Like, I'm so tired of being friends with my, she just said she didn't want to only have her work friends as friends.
Yeah.
And she was like, where do you go to network? And I was like, well, I've never been to any networking events here, really, that are for women only. I was like, I was lucky enough when I moved to Dubai that I knew enough people that kind of like opened different groups of friends
right,
for me.
Right.
So then she was like, yeah, but she doesn't have that. She has one group of friends, but she wants to meet more diverse people. Then I was like, you know what? We might have identified a gap in the market. And this is something I always wanted to do because right now, all of my teaching, all of my interaction is online. I wanted to bring it offline.
IRL.
So then I thought, okay, instead of just doing random meetups where people can come in and there's no, like, there's no value that you get from a meetup other than seeing me. So then I was like, let's try and start something. So then we had a little brainstorm and we realized that both of us, we have really big audiences of women. And we, our main thing, she wants to, like, empower women financially, get them to, you know what to do with their money. And mine is a bit more professional development. So I was like, great, great fit. So we thought, okay, let's try it. And then we did the launch and we had a great, great response from that. And then now we are, we tried to do different things to see what sticks. We've done different masterclasses, networking events. And now both of us have quit our jobs. So we're going to do this full time. So we are thinking about ways to expand a little bit what we do with Penn. But honestly, it's been amazing to see how the way we interact and the way we give value in person is very different to the way you do it online. Because online is very curated. It's very kind of like sent in the abyss of like whoever resonates with it resonates. But in person, you need to curate based on who is coming. And you get the live feedback. Right? And then you can interact with people. And I love in-person now, I have to say, because, you know, you really get to connect with people and you see other people connecting in front of you. And that has been incredible. So even though I love both, but the in-person stays special.
I've attended two, three
of
them.
I've been to all of them.
All of them. All of your master classes so far. And the audience is very engaged,
they
right? They're always asking questions. Like, I think you run out of time to get to all the questions in that. That must be really wonderful to see.
It is. It's nice. And also, it's nice to see the quality of your audience as well, when you realize that it's not just people who are blindly following you. It's just people who are actively trying to improve themselves. And they are learning from you to put that into practice. And I love that.
Nice. So you've done a few seasons now of Dream Girl, right? We're on season 5.
Yeah, correct.
Nice.
Yeah.
Look at me, super fan.
And
you've had like a lot of incredible women come on the podcast. I've watched a lot of your episodes. I've been on it. And I've learned a lot from your guests, right? But you have probably learned the most, given that you've interviewed all of these amazing women. So how do you think, like, Dream Girl has impacted your life, and what are some of the bigger lessons you've learned?
Oh, wow. Very good question. I think the main thing that has the main impact is I have made some great friends. Who we started off as guests and then after that we kind of like maintained the relationship and they're now really solid friends. And the contrary was also true, where I brought in some really close friends and my family on the podcast.
I love that episode.
Right. And then you see another side of them.
Yeah.
And especially even with you, right? Like I know you up close, but then learning about you professionally and the challenges and the growth are not things that you talk about necessarily as a friend, right? Yeah. So it was really good to see that side of the people who are close to me in real life. But the main thing, as I was saying, you know, for me the podcast is really like a selfish way for me to just meet new people and talk and learn from them. And I always ask questions that I genuinely want to learn. You know, it's not just for the podcast, but it's things that that are bothering me or things that I'm trying to solve. And I think I'm gonna split it into like professional and personal, right? So personal life, the main thing I learned is how to purge. And this is something that a lot of guests have mentioned, even right now, before we were recording, someone else said the same thing, that you need to get rid of some dead branches from the tree. And that's one thing that I wouldn't know who to ask, and I wouldn't know where to look for this advice, but this is something that I've experienced, and I got to ask so many people who are in diverse fields, diverse ages, you know, but they all had the same thing that you need to purge. And this made me realize that it's not a me problem. It's just how things are sometimes. And then you kind of like have to accept that this is the reality. And then it made it a little bit better to swallow that pill, you know. So that personal life, definitely learned that. Professional life, I have learned so much. Whether it is in terms of how do you deal with challenges, do you deal with rejections, and even how to deal with change. And all of this I've learned from my guests, from them sharing different ways of life. But but honestly, if I were to say overall, the one thing I realize is that two things, actually.
Okay.
Two things. One thing about me and one thing about people in general. So one thing about people is that your vibe makes a very big difference. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when a guest comes in and they're super excited, they're very positive, they're open. And that manifests itself in their body language and the way they're talking to you, the energy. Way they're interacting, the energy you feel in the room. It makes a huge difference on how people view you.
Yeah.
And most of the times it's been like the people who are the most famous, who are so down to earth and they're so open. And I was like, I love this and I want to be this person, you know? Yeah. So that's something I learned from them. At the same time, when someone comes in and they're very closed off, then it's hard for me even as a host to be
like pride.
An hour is a long time, you know, for us to have a conversation. And constantly having to pry makes it really hard. Yeah. And I'm like, even going by on your day to day, whether it is at work or with the people around you, you don't want to be like this. Yeah. Then you're a burden on everybody. So that's one thing I learned there. But one thing I learned about myself. Ooh. So you know I'm a Gemini.
As am I.
Are you as well?
Yeah.
That explains why we get along. Well, you know what people say about Geminis, right? That we're annoying.
Yeah.
And we're two-faced.
And chaos.
I can't really deny the chaos. Both of us are very chaotic. Yeah. But one thing I learned is that what it means to be Gemini really is that I can get along with just about anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I had never clocked before.
Oh.
I just realized this. I was like, you know what? And this is actually one of the coordinators of the podcast studio who was behind camera, and he's seen me do many different podcasts. Right. Mm-hmm. And then one day we actually had three recordings back to back. And then afterwards he was like, how do you do it? And especially the last guest was very difficult. Mm. And he was like, you were so nice to her. He was like, I was about to like backhand her for you. And I was like, oh, come on. And he was like, you are so good at talking to anybody. Mm. However you're feeling, however tired you are good at making everybody comfortable. And I was like, oh yeah, I never realized this. And you know how we do it? We basically, it's a lot of self-awareness, right? So you're self-aware.
Yeah.
And you are aware of the other person. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, being a bit of an empath as well, you can tell what the other person is comfortable with and what is triggering them.
Yeah.
So then you mold yourself into that.
Yeah.
That will make them comfortable. Yeah. And that's what both of us do. Wow. Even the first time we met.
Yeah, we were just
right on it. But I was so like, how do you call it, like sensory overload that day.
Yeah. There were a lot of people in that.
There was a lot of people. It was hot.
It was hot. Yeah.
There was a barbecue going on and I knew nobody except for Joel.
Oh yeah. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean maybe for Harsh, but for Harsh was on there when I walked in. And I was like, oh my God, people everywhere. And then I remember just being like, okay, this is overwhelming. Yeah. So I'm just gonna like identify someone I can latch on to, right? And I remember when I saw you, you made such an effort to make me feel comfortable and immediately we bonded.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you do as well as an empath and a Gemini. And I think it's a great life skill to have because not only everybody leaves feeling good around you, but also it just means that you are so, I don't know, it's just like, it's not hard for you to get anywhere and to get what you want, like today. Didn't you get what you wanted? Didn't you?
I did. Had a little face-to-face rendezvous.
Yeah. So you knew that, if you go to meet this person face-to-face, that you can kind of like get your way.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I do too. Yeah. It's like a lot of times I know that by email is getting lost. Mm. I will call or I'll go meet them in person and try to negotiate. It helps negotiation a lot. And yeah, so that's what I learned about myself. I'm a great negotiator.
Okay, so you have mentioned, you know, in kind of relation to your guests, but also the energy that they put out is very important, right? And it affects kind of how you do the podcast. And you mentioned a bit before also that you're putting out new energy, right? So what is this new energy that you're putting out?
There are a few things in terms of new energy. Mm-hmm. The first one is to do with professional life, which is trying to stop being in the scarcity mindset, which again, we talked about recently, where we are spending money, whether it is for, you know, business, rent, all of that.
Big, we get very stressed out with our bills.
We message each other being like, I just paid this much for rent. You know, I said this to my dad as well. I was like, I just paid a big amount of money for rent. He was like, okay, for the house that you're going to live in. I was like, yeah, why are they taking money from me? You know, and it's just, and you were like, oh, I just put this big order.
Yeah.
So it's stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's now stopping that and thinking, mm-hmm. we're not in a scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
We are about abundance. We are spending money to make money. Money mm-hmm. will come. We're not worried about that. So that's one thing I'm really trying to focus, mm-hmm. especially when saying no to brand deals, saying no to people who are not appreciating the value that I offer and trying to like down market me, just saying no, because I'm like, nope, someone else will come along, you know? So that's one of the things I'm trying to put out there. And the second one is, again, scarcity mindset when it comes to men, you know? So not trying to think, okay, what is around?
Mm.
Let me pick my trash mm-hmm. out of the trash that's out there. No. We're going to think about how this guy is great and he's coming.
He was at COP28 and we just missed him.
We just missed him.
He's at STEP, but we're in here.
Oh, maybe he's not, maybe he's in Qatar for Web Summit. Ooh. We don't know. We don't know. He might be around, mm-hmm. you know, doing VC things. But... This is a great reference. Imagine if this ages really well. Imagine.
That would be great.
That would be great. Anyway, I lost my train of thoughts.
No scarcity mindset when it comes to men.
Yeah. So that's the main thing, you know, just like trying to think of the fact that, you know, it's not scarce.
Yeah.
It's coming. We don't need to worry about it. It's the main thing is not to worry. Because I'm an overthinker. Mm-hmm. I don't want to overthink anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. It's making me age faster.
Yeah.
I'm done. Yeah. I'm just going to wait it out and believe in whatever is coming is coming. And I'm just going to do my own little thing.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. So it's about thinking about abundance, right?
Yes.
And I think I'm trying to do the same. And I'm trying to give more and not expect anything in return.
Yeah.
But... as I cultivate this, I do find that there are people in my life that are more transactional, I would say, than the kinds of relationships that I want to grow or keep, right? You, as a very influential person, must also have experience, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like you have a lot to offer people. So talk to me a bit about this.
Oh. Yeah, so that's a tough one, mm-hmm. right? And to be honest with you, I'm still trying to learn how to manage this. But I have had really bad experiences. Mm-hmm. For example, these people who are no longer my friends kind of like invited me over to their house one day trying to be really nice. And I thought, oh, it's really sweet.
Yeah.
But what they wanted was for me to post a picture about this new product they're launching. And I had no idea they were doing it. And they kind of like ambushed me into posting it because we never had a conversation about whether we are doing this, whether this is happening, nothing.
Wow.
Right? It's just, oh, here you go, post it. And I was a bit like, okay, but this is not something that I use. This is not something that I understand. So why would I post it? They were like, oh, it doesn't matter, just post it. And very pushy and not in a way of, we would really appreciate it if you could do this for us. None of that.
Oh.
Right? It was very much like, do it. And so obviously I did it. You know me? Yes.
Oh my God. Okay, this is before we grew our backbone.
It was. So obviously I did that. And then recently as well, a lot of people keep asking me. And what I find funny is whenever I post stories, these people would never react until they see someone or something that they need.
It's relevant to them.
Yeah. So if they're like, oh, this person is cool, introduce me. Yes. And it's a bit of like, how do I say no? And I think this is something I probably need help with because I don't know how to say no.
Yeah.
So one thing, Humaira, who we both know.
Hey, Humaira.
Hey, Humaira. She has been like, okay, just tell them Humaira is your manager. Talk to Humaira.
And nobody wants to do that.
Who's going to do that? Who's going to ask Humaira?
Nobody.
Humaira is scary in a good way. And she was like, enough, because she gets really annoyed at me as well for always saying yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are just like, hey, you know this person. I see you. This person follows you. Can you introduce me?
You.
Yeah. Can you introduce me? And then I'm a bit of like, listen, I don't mind. Like if you told me, you met this person at Georgia, mm-hmm. can you introduce me? Immediately I will do it, right? Yeah. But it's because we have that relationship. Yeah. You're on that level. Mm-hmm. But people who are on that level and are trying to be like, hey, yeah. do this for me. And there are people who you almost know that if you ever asked for a favor, they would say no. You know? And it's just a bit like, how do I say no? And that's the thing, like, other friends, like my friend Bilal, mm-hmm. he started his paddle court and he was like, do you mind doing this? And I was like, of course, that's a no-brainer for mm-hmm. me, you know? So it's like, it's not that I don't want to help my friends, and a lot of people helped me mm-hmm. when I was growing mm-hmm. up. And I'm like, I would be happy to, my friends, no question asked, no money asked, you know? Yeah. It's like, it's between us, we will do it. But anyone who's like, kind of like, just transactional, and the thing is, it's so obvious to me that it's transactional, but I don't know how to say no. That's my problem.
Okay, so this is interesting, right? Because I think we each have our things that we struggle with.
Yes.
Like, you and I both struggle with saying no.
Yes. Yeah, you too. Please.
I admit it.
Yeah.
On, you know, podcasts. but also, I think, you know, you mentioned that with Dream Girl and your guests, you've built this, like, network of amazing women. You have your close friends who are like a shield around you. How do you leverage this community to get advice? And, you know, like, I think it's a good practice for everybody. I don't take enough advantage of, like, the amazing women in my life. So how do you leverage the kind of people around you to get advice?
You know what? I don't know. So I don't know if you heard, that's the question I asked the previous guest as well. And I told her, yes, we have great networks. Mm-hmm. How do you make efficient use of that network? And I think that's one thing I'm struggling. Recently, somebody told me you should build an Excel sheet of your network of who do you know.
Wow.
And I was like, that feels really transactional.
Yeah.
She was like, build a sheet of who you know and how can they be helpful?
Oh, and I was like, that's a bit ick.
Yeah, I was like, eek, right? Yeah. I was like, but that just means you're going to look at everybody through a very transactional lens. And I don't like this. And I like how you said ask for advice rather than ask for things or ask for, right? And I think ask for advice is a very fair thing to do from your network. But, and also this is another thing that I would like to add is that you should not be asking advice from everybody either, right? So that's something I made a mistake in the past. Mm-hmm. It's just, whenever I had a decision to make, that I would run it past a lot of people. Why? It's my decision to make.
Yeah.
And then you're giving this power to people to put doubt in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I've done it really badly in the past, and I will never do that again, because I know who are the people whose judgment I trust.
Yeah.
And they are the only ones who I would go to validate my decision, not make them make the choice for me. And that's what I do with you a lot of times, right? Yeah. I always tell you, these are the two options. I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think?
Yeah.
And that's what I do to a very select group of people, asking them to validate my decision. And if they have good points about why it's not a good decision, I will take it on board. But you know what they say, right? Never take advice from someone whose shoes you wouldn't wear.
Yeah.
And what is it like? Don't take advice on how to tie your laces from someone whose shoes you wouldn't wear, or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very good point. You should not be taking advice from everybody.
Yeah.
But figuring out who you want to take advice from, there are two factors. The first one is people who you trust their judgment and you know that they are going to be honest with you rather than push any kind of agenda.
Yeah.
And the second one is someone who is like, you know, has a valid point here. Not either they're an expert on the field or someone who has lived through it.
Has That's experience.
It. Yeah, lived through it. And I think right now I'm being very bad at it. But for example, when I had issues with going full-time on content, what I did was reached out to a few of the friends that I have who are full-time content creators and been like, I just want a coffee with you. And as soon as we sat down, I explained, listen, I just went full-time. And any advice you have at this point is going to be great. And I think this is a good and a bad approach, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the good thing is, yes, now they know. And they did give me some really useful tips. But at the same time, it's bad because I didn't have any specific questions.
Yeah.
So even if the person wants to help, like, there is a vast ocean of things they could be helping you with right now.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like I'm not bad at reaching out to people.
Yeah.
I'm very good at reaching out and throwing my problems on them. The other thing is just trying to be a little bit more diligent in the way I form the question.
Yeah.
And then reaching out to people.
Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you. You've been a wonderful host.
And it was great having you.
maybe we're going to do this into a new thing of like Dream Girl Satellite, where you are the host.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we get the views.
If we get the views. So, guys, please. All right. Thank you, Shweta.
Thank you, Sheen.